Hi, I'm Jennifer Vine, President and CEO of the Education Foundation of Sarasota County and your host for Education Conversations, a discussion forum to share innovative and relevant thoughts, research, and ideas on education today. In this podcast, we explore ways to help prepare students to thrive. Welcome to this episode of Education Conversations, Funding Public Education. In Florida today, as in much of the country, K-12 public education is changing, and that's certainly the case with the funding of public education. And so in this episode, we're going to explore the state of funding, how it's changed, how it works, and what those implications of changes might actually mean. And so today, I'm excited to dig into this issue with Holly Bullard. And Holly is the Chief Strategy and Development Officer for the Florida Policy Institute, a nonprofit organization with a mission to advance state policies and budgets that improve the economic mobility and quality of life for all Floridians. She has extensive experience in public policy and advocacy while earning her master's degree in political science at Georgetown University. Holly wrote her thesis on the impact of school size on student achievement. She has also previously served in other roles, such as the Senior Director of Financial Stability at United Way Suncoast. Holly, it is a pleasure to welcome you to Education Conversations. Thank you so much for stopping by to talk about funding public education.
So absolutely, it's exciting to be here.
Thank you so much, Holly. Well, for the listeners who may be unfamiliar with the Florida Policy Institute, let's maybe start with that. Can you just talk a little bit about the organization and why you were drawn to it, and what is the corpus of the work and the movement that it's doing today?
Sure. So Florida Policy Institute is a nonprofit, nonpartisan think tank, essentially. You know, we focus a lot on just sharing and educating the general public and lawmakers and the media about a lot of fiscal policy, to be honest. So we're at core of Fiscal Policy Institute, looking at the budget, impact of proposals and revenue forecasts. But our focus is a lot on ensuring that we are investing what we should be in terms of our education and health and other really important, you know, building blocks for a good life for Floridians, and really keep an eye towards supporting families with low incomes and marginalized communities. So that's really important to keep in mind about our focus. What really drew me to the role was being able to get involved and being the daughter of public school teachers in Florida and seeing, you know, firsthand the different types of resources available and learning over time, you know, the policy choices made at the state level and at the district level do, you know, impact outcomes and different types of resources available. That was something that I learned, you know, quite early on, but had a world-class public education in Florida and wanted to come back and ensure that we were really doing that and investing for our future kids. And now I'm a mom of a kiddo here in Sarasota and look forward to seeing that really grow and flourish here as well, and ensuring that we have the resources in the future that you know, I had growing up and that, you know, we historically have had here over the last couple decades in Sarasota.
It sounds like you bring such a depth and breadth to this conversation, not only with your professional experience, but also the personal upbringing that you had. And then now you're seeing it, you know, first line as a parent, having a little one here in Sarasota County Schools. I like how you described Florida Policy Institute, and I want to make sure my understanding was captured correctly. It sounds like you all look at both advocating and championing for families to thrive in the community. So with a real tilted lens towards underserved communities, low-income families, and how they can be bolstered and strengthened. And then coupled with that is, how are the policy decisions that support that effort, what are the implications of the decisions that the legislature is making, whether they're good financial decisions or maybe unintended consequences? So did I capture that okay?
Right, definitely. We have an opinion, but that is a foundation on fact, right? So we're fact-based as we engage in explaining the facts and understanding the policies and providing our analysis, but that is all really grounded in trying to be as accurate as possible for Floridians and for our lawmakers so that they have what they need in order to make the best decisions possible.
That's great. And I can say from just my own vantage point, and again, I'm much more of an outsider than an insider for sure, but you seem, Florida Policy Institute does seem to be a go-to thought partner and expert in this field. So kudos to Florida Policy Institute to how you all have really gained credibility within the state.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So one of the things we want to talk about today is kind of focusing on the area that you all look at as it pertains to funding public education. And so can you maybe start us off with a broader perspective of K-12 funding in Florida? And what are some of the changes you've seen and what concerns do you have right now?
I'd like to go back in time a little bit to right before the Great Recession, right? Mm-hmm. So when we look at funding for schools in Florida, it was trending in the right direction. You know, we've always been ranked fairly low per pupil over the last few decades. But if you go back to 2007, 2008, right around that time, we were making some headway. And then, of course, the Great Recession hits and we get a lot less revenue. And states, you know, unlike the federal government, you know, states have to have a balanced budget. And so difficult decisions have to be made, right? You have less revenue, you have to do less with that and identify areas to cut. And really no agency, no area of the budget is safe when you have a $10 billion cut to make when your budget's about $90 billion, right? So an enormous cut. And there were really hard decisions made at that moment with lawmakers and the governor. They were identifying new revenue, to be honest, but there's just no way that you can make up that. So when you look at the drop in terms of the drop in the base student allocation, which is the core kind of best funding source for our public schools in Florida, the most flexible and the best marker, you know, that I look at year over year, that's the best way to compare year over year, is to kind of look at where's that base student allocation at, right? And because that's what pays for teachers, that's for salaries, the vast majority of the budgets of every district. So we look at the BSA at the moment of the Great Recession and how it dropped precipitously, that we actually cut it more and we cut teacher salaries more in Florida than I think maybe only two other states was more drastic, and just because of these really tough decisions that we had to make. And really, when you look at us crawling out from that to say, you know, every year since then, to the credit of the legislature and the governors, that they've added BSA, right, that it's gone in the right direction. But when you adjust for inflation, we're not there yet. And we're not there yet by hundreds of dollars still. So I do like to lift that we have been dealing in a sort of a moment of scarcity with the state level funding over the last decade and a half, because we haven't come back, right, mm-hmm. from that Great Recession drop, because that's what happens when you have a recession. You get less money and you have to balance your budget. And so tough decisions have to be made. So that's sort of where we are generally. I think the BSA is a good note, you know, per pupil, and a base student allocation is going in the right direction. But even still to this day, at this moment, we're 46th per pupil nationally. Mm-hmm. And so you go, okay, what does that mean? That means that if we bring it back locally here, you know, Sarasota and in other communities, that they go, you know what, we see the return on our investment in our investing in schools, and we do. And Sarasota is a great example of that, where for about 20 years, we've voted for a local referenda to invest locally. But really, when you think of why that is, it's because you're kind of making up for that ground that the state has yet to make up on their end for the funding for schools. So in the last, I'd say like 5 to 8 years especially, you're seeing districts across the state saying, we want to follow Sarasota's lead to a certain extent. You see that local, you know, regionally mm-hmm. here in other parts of the state too. They go, look, we can't retain teachers. We need to ask our local, you know, tax base for funding. An interesting output from that is that you have varying inequities in terms mm-hmm. of funding, because then you have Sarasota, we have the ability to do that, to have a millage that actually draws down a lot of funding. Other rural and less wealthy, essentially, communities in Florida don't have that ability to do mm-hmm. that. So always want to draw back to what, how are we addressing and thinking about base student allocation and the per pupil funding from the state level to really make up for that for a decade and a half, and to really look back, like, what would it be? It's a few hundred dollars more per pupil. What would it be if we were to have to go back to pre-Great Recession levels mm-hmm. and really make that investment?
So that actually brings me back to probably many listeners may not even realize what the Florida funding formula is, how it's calculated. You alluded to the base student allocation, which is often the reference point and the indicator as they're measuring in comparison to other states. And that's where you're referencing the ranking. There's also within that formula is the local county effort. And that's where that piece in that equation, that's where you get a lot of that variance, as you were alluding to with, because it's based on property values. And so right. rural counties and lesser wealthy counties won't have as much of that county draw of income bringing into that. And then to your point, we absolutely have seen how Sarasota led the way with the tax referendum, and many counties have followed suit in a way to generate more funding, more discretionary funding right. even, to allow districts to operate. So just wanted to paint that picture, because I do think the funding formula itself is a little complex sometimes. Like people don't realize what's kind of behind the curtain yeah. within that. So where I want to go to next with this question is helping to understand the listeners, as oftentimes, at least from my purview, I hear people will say, we've got a funding problem, we're ranked 46, we've got to have more money in the coffers. And then other people are saying, it's not a funding problem. That's not the problem to address. How does Florida Policy Institute look at that, and how can we educate our listeners on that?
I'll first sort of respond to that as a citizen of Sarasota, right? As an imam who lives here and a voter here, and then, you know, from a policy wonk person. Mm-hmm. But as Holly, the person who lives here in Sarasota, I think of just driving around here in 2022 and seeing all of our signs and saying, you know, we need to keep the A and vote for this referendum. And that was, 84%, I think.
Right.
And then you saw folks come out, and it was a bipartisan supported, like people from different political parties, from different areas, from business groups to see the ballot. So many corners of our community and came out and said, you know, we support this referenda again. And that is not nothing, right? The full mill is a community being very generous to their mm-hmm. public schools, and to say, you know, we need to keep the A, and to understand that that is connected. It is not the end all and be all, right? It is not sufficient to have an A school just purely by having funding. You know, we have had a great investments. We have other partners. I mean, just a very... just a wealth. This is really a community. And then it's drawing people like me. I grew up in Tampa Bay. And as you said, I was around the country for a little bit and wanted to come home to Florida, and kind of found myself in Sarasota. And, you know, you just fall in love with this area, and you have a kid, you go, yeah, I want to be in Sarasota. I want those schools and the community that believes in that and invests in it. And this isn't partisan, because mm-hmm. look at the last referendum election. So right. when we think about that and you go, yeah, actually, 100,000 people, maybe a little bit more than that, I think, came out and voted for the referenda.
Right.
Well, yeah, how many kids do we have in our whole school system? Like 50,000-ish, right mm-hmm. around there. Mm-hmm. So about double people came out. So we know not all of them have kids, too, mm-hmm. is the point, right? Mm-hmm. Who said, you know, we see a value in this, and on average about $100 per property owner, right? So understanding that connection and sort of that intuitive, that the adequate resources and the adequate support for teacher retention, especially for quality teacher retention, for supporting that. It is not necessarily sufficient to get a gold star, mm-hmm. but it is necessary, right? How we talk about in science, it is a necessity to have some basic support and funding, and to have that conversation constantly. It's like, okay, well then, look, the voters here understand that.
Right.
And I think having that discussion about, like, well, let's not even compare ourselves to Massachusetts Invest or something. Let's just talk about Florida. Let's talk about Florida, what we invested pre-Great Recession, and maybe kind of evaluate that and go, okay, well, what does that look like? what are some pressures that we should plan for and think about in terms of protecting and maybe growing that support and for funding so that DeSoto County and other counties can also, you know, like, so if we're if we're invested in fairness and in equity and thinking about Florida as a community that has, you know, we have our farms and our heartland that have such important parts of our communities and our coastal areas, you know, the divergence in the quality and supports is just unfair. Right? Mm-hmm. And so that gets back to a broader, like, how are we investing and what are opportunities to do that? There are revenue opportunities out there that we could tap into that, you know, you see interests across the board, regardless of party, to say, oh, that's interesting. How do we deploy that to have these resources best? So I would say I push back a little bit on that to say it's a sufficient funding is necessary, but yeah, it's not sufficient to get you there, but without, mm-hmm. without it, is it difficult to get to the supportive and outcomes that you need.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that. And, in Sarasota, in addition to the tax referendum, we also have the half penny sales tax, which also is allocated. Half of that is allocated for capital improvements, which is also another boon and a testament to Sarasota County's commitment to public education, which has been really wonderful to see, as you mentioned, just the outpouring of the cross-section of all people voting in favor of both of those additional taxes.
Right,
That's a testament. That's a real testament.
Rather than just saying, like, is this an academic argument? Or even if I could show people graphs and stuff, but because I'm a policy wonk, but it's more of like, just look at how people act, and especially in our community. If we're talking about Sarasota, we're here, how people have said, yeah, we understand that there's a connection between investments and the quality that we appreciate that we have seen historically in our schools.
That's great. So how would you describe the fiscal outlook of Sarasota County specifically? And knowing that we have been an A-rated school for nearly as long, if not as long, I mean, I'm sorry, I don't have the years in front of me, but it's been a long time since the grading system came out. Mm-hmm. In addition to the referendum, there has to be some connectivity, some, you know, positive correlation there. So how do you view the fiscal outlook for Sarasota County right now?
I'll preface this with, I'm not an expert locally in the school district because, mm-hmm. as you said, the state funding formula is very complicated.
Yeah.
And I'll also say that education finance is only one tiny part of my job. Like, we also work on lots of other stuff like health policy and other but I would say, you know, Medicaid billing and the formula for education funding, probably the most complicated part in like the entire budget. I challenge someone to show me something more complicated. You know, I'm not necessarily worried about Sarasota too much. I as someone who really loves this community, but I also have a strong, affinity for Florida. I want to see mm-hmm. all of us. Mm-hmm. I want to see all of our kids mm-hmm. thrive, and to use the success that we've had here. And I'd love to see that ripple through. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think you see that with our region. You know, mm-hmm. Manatee for a long time, right? We remember, like, oh well. Teachers can't afford to live in Sarasota, so they'll live in Manatee, but they drive and work in Sarasota. And you see this kind of interesting regional issues and people, again, across party or regardless of sort of industry, et cetera, in Manatee say, you know what, we need to be competitive too. And I just really would hope that we can maybe even relook at the formula. You know, it was made in 1973.
Right.
And so it's a little stale. Last year, there were some major changes around something called categorical. You could get into very wonky stuff mm-hmm, here, and it gets mm-hmm. very complicated. So there's hopefully is more appetite to say, okay, you know, we've had this large program that's at the new fiscal impact in terms of the universal voucher mm-hmm. program from last session. Mm-hmm. And to say, okay, well, how do we long-term ensure that the school districts have what they need? Because, you know, economies are cyclical. Florida's economy is very sensitive to national ebbs and flows, right? Mm-hmm. Because of the way that our industry works, the industries that are predominant, you know, being tourism and service, et cetera. So when another recession will hit, I hope it never does, but they always do just because of the way cyclical nature. And then you say, okay, well, if there are cuts that would have to be put on the table, that people, the more we understand about our budget and where revenue opportunities are, or where we raise funding and then how we spend it, the better we are prepared mm-hmm. for the future, where there could be another recession in which cuts are lifted, right? And it's not this legislature. I don't even think it'd be next legislature. Maybe it wouldn't even be, maybe it'd be the next governorship. But for all of us to understand that, what are areas and what are ways that we can protect that and protect our investments that we've made, and people who raise their hand here and say, like, we should invest and make sure that we have these quality schools. So that's part of my job, is to ensure that, how can we take a step back and to say, you know, some of what we're crowing about, you know, fiscal concerns isn't necessarily about this year or next mm-hmm. year. It's a little bit about, how do we plan for 5 to 10 years? I mean, with Sarasota specifically, I'm hoping, and I don't think that you would see any kind of like exodus from schools there that would drop their per pupil count. I haven't looked, I know that the most recent count just came out, mm-hmm. you know, and you can kind of look at that. And because it is base student allocation is per pupil, that's the funding that, you know, you receive. But I don't think that there's an exodus necessarily there. I think that, you know, long-term, Sarasota is just in a great spot, because if, as long as we understand, hey, this is a message we're sending out so that young professionals, mm-hmm. you know, not, whether it's me or others, that say, hey, Sarasota schools are a place, regardless, right? There's this reputation that's you know, there's a culture, a strong culture of support. And so really thinking about that and the impact on the economy and everything. Long-term fiscally, I think just girding for, you know, a possible recession in the future, nowhere near close to that, but understanding that it's not, you know, a given. Right. That it's right. not a given, and that we should be thinking about and raising up the voice about how much we support and value our schools and want to protect our investment in them.
We've had topics on this already on previous podcasts, but with the expansion of school choice, and Florida Policy Institute was terrific in terms of making some forecasts and projections mm-hmm. of what the consequences or implications could be. So can you shed a little light on where the concern and what people should be thinking about as we are continuing to see the expansion of school choice?
Sure. So last January, when the proposal was introduced, HB1 last session, my biggest concern was mostly about how vouchers at that juncture, right before last session, how they were funded, like the mechanism how they were funded. Between 2019, 2020, 2021, those 3 years, we did have a fairly large, expansive voucher program, choice program. That was for fairly low-income folks, mm-hmm. right? So for different populations, right? It wasn't mm-hmm. universal at that point. And this is when you get into, someone needs to be like peeling into the formula, the FEFP, and saying, okay, well, how are we funding this, right? And at that moment, it was expanding the choice program, the voucher program, but every kid that opted into the voucher program would be funded out of the amount that's essentially allocated for the district that they're in. And if that was just a handful of kids, it wouldn't be a big deal. But especially because a lot of them weren't leaving the school district, they were in private school, siblings could participate. There's a lot of like current private school kids were opting into it. You saw this drain of funding. And so when HB1 was proposed, without more explanation as to how it was going to be funded, that was my base concern, mm-hmm. was that if we had funded it as we had funded the program the previous couple of years, which had for the first time taken funding from our general revenue in addition to this a long-term tax credit program that we've had. So that's very wonky, other to say. I was very concerned that if you grew it universally mm-hmm. to the point where it could be, you know, between 400,000 and 500,000 kids, and you didn't allocate enough funding, where's that money going to come from? It's going to come from our school district. So it's almost a lose-lose. And that was really my biggest concern. And to be honest, that was something that was reflected. We raised alarms. We talked to legislators, talked to committee staff. We had conversations, showed our projections. There were differing projections. But, you know, in the end, the current budget year, so what they came up with in the last session, actually, because we estimated about $4 billion, and they're estimates, right? You sure. do the best that you can. And then But the legislature actually identified between the different buckets that could go to the voucher program, they actually allocated $4.2 billion. So even a little bit more than what we had said. Mm-hmm. And so if you were to put aside issues that a lot of some concerns or even proponents, you know, back and forth about was the value and accountability and performance, et cetera, with vouchers. But if you look at, you know, what one of the sole priorities of FPI, of ensuring that we have the investments long-term fiscally for our public schools, at least it wasn't sort of a doomsday scenario fiscally, because they did allocate enough. And I still think when you see the most recent numbers just put out about 400, there's expected to go up to about 450,000 in the next session. That would get you, depending, because again, the vouchers for kids with disabilities actually are a little bit more expensive, which makes mm-hmm. sense. Mm-hmm. You know, they have higher needs that are more expensive. So again, estimates I would say would be about what we thought, you know, last year. But again, it's more of like, okay, so that's a new recurring cost, you know, and there are thoughts about what kind of performance do the schools have? Are they, and for our kids, you know, we need to come back as Floridians in our community and say, well, what happens to kids, you know, in homeschool, you know, cause there's a homeschoolers can participate now too, without sort of accountability of their learnings or like, what is our commitment to each other and to children? Who maybe their parents aren't able to choose and don't have the capacity to engage them, right? What is our accountability to all the children in our community? So that's a conversation we need to have about performance and, you know, what does our future workforce look like? And is it, what's accountability for taxpayer funding? But put that all aside, the fiscal component, that's kind of where we landed. Mm-hmm. I think people think I was like a doomsday person, but in the end, people listening and having those conversations about the budget, right? It's mm-hmm. like, this is why budget's important, because it is not, it's not having the expansive ripple effects because people were open and saying, okay, let's talk about projections. Yeah.
So that's great. So it actually sounds like the efforts that Florida Policy Institute did to inform and educate as they were working on their budget decisions actually did make an impact. So good job on that. That's really terrific. So looking beyond educational funding, with the new legislative session now underway, what educational policies are you watching?
You know, we always focus on the budget, and it's a big effort, right? You can't just say like, oh, it's a budget and then everything else, because the budget is the document of our priorities as a state, and it takes a long time. It is very complicated. So we're a small staff, we're a small nonprofit. So we have lots of partners, thankfully, that can look at a lot of other moving pieces. There are follow-up bills and legislation moving that follow up from the choice legislation passed last session, mainly being around some accountability and some issues about payments, et cetera. One that was around what the vouchers could be used for. Some things kind of that I think you could imagine year over year seeing this, as especially as some parents maybe lift issues or brought maybe performance that the community. That's why it's really important to pay attention, because mm-hmm. they're doing some, from my perspective, some minor but important accountability and transparency issues, but could be improved. So that's moving, and that's probably going to pass. There's a major bill around public schools and, you know, quote unquote, deregulating them. I don't know if that's the best word, but that's what everyone's using. So mm-hmm. if we say deregulation of public schools, 30 years, we've had a lot. It's just cumulative, right? Cumulative of rules and regulations and things that are so complex and mundane that general public would kind of, your eyes would glass over. But it is. It's adding all this stuff to your administrators and your superintendents making tough decisions. So I think it's trying to address some of those. But, you know, on the other hand, there are major things happening in our schools now that it doesn't necessarily address. So it's really important for listeners and everyone engaged to lift that, because it's right now a session is happening, depending when listeners are tuning in. But that legislation is moving. And so if there's something around our public schools that you feel, you know, restrictions that are unfair or maybe impacting something, reach out to your legislator. Mm-hmm. And so I would lift that up. So those are major things moving. Something that Florida Policy Institute has been really engaged in, and I will pitch it because I do think it's an education bill and it's been going through education committees, has been a couple bills that roll back some child labor protections that we're really concerned about, especially as it goes to education outcomes. And, there's a lot of research that shows excessive work hours during the school week when you're 16 and 17 just doesn't bode well for high school attainment or long-term economic attainment. So those have been our focus. And so, you kind of have a dance card that, you have to kind of choose your battle sort of. And that's one where we really wanted to lift up the impact of that and to really decipher the bill too. This one of our main goals, right, is to share materials that are easy to understand and that the general public and Floridians and media understand what's happening.
So where would be the best place for listeners who want to listen to your or learn about your position? Do they go to your website to get this information? And if so, what is your website?
Sure. Our website is floridapolicy.org. And definitely follow us on different social channels. That's always really great. But our website is what we pour our heart and soul into, and sign up for our newsletter, which you can on our website as well. We don't send too much, and it's pretty high valuable stuff, we think, in terms of what we share out. But follow us on different socials. They're all essentially at Florida Policy. Mm-hmm. So pretty much your social channels that you like, you can check us out at Florida Policy.
Very informative. And again, thank you for leading the way in following the legislation, informing our legislators of some of the impacts as you see bills being introduced. And certainly I think the ones you are watching are catching the attention as well of many of the educators and families here locally, statewide, I should even say. So as we kind of end our time here, Holly, I'd love to just ask a final question, and that's more of just getting a sneak peek of you personally. As you mentioned, you're a graduate of the Florida school systems in Pinellas County. Your parents were educators. How did you develop kind of your affinity for the work going into Florida Policy Institute to where you are now? What was that journey for you?
I hate to put my mom on blast here, but she's definitely the person who shaped me a lot. She ended up being the principal at Seminole Elementary in Pinellas County and retired there. Diane Cato, if anyone's listening out there, but someone who shaped me drastically. And when I was in high school, just really understanding some of the beginning of policy decisions that the school board was making there in Pinellas County, especially as it were to sort of ending their choice program as it was. So in the 90s and early 2000s, you could choose to do different magnets. You could go across the school system, and it wasn't necessarily that you had to have really high test scores. It was like an interest, right? And it was a really great way to provide this, community and diversity of choice and diversity of students, but that it was really about choice, and I'm a product of choice, to be honest, because I went to lots of the different magnet programs in Pinellas County and just got a world-class education, and the people that I met in the different communities really shaped me in terms of the different types of friends and everything. And then really seeing how not only the media cover that, but then also the impacts of some of the schools and communities that I cared a lot about in Pinellas County with the end of that decision, which was a fiscal decision, right? Just bus kids everywhere is expensive. It is. and so once they were granted what's called unitary status from the federal government, the Pinellas County School Board decided, we're going to kind of phase that out. But I knew at that moment, that's a fiscal policy kind of mundane decision that had really drastic consequences that I won't talk too much now because we're running out of time. But, it was covered in a Tampa Bay Times article called Failure Factories, and just really kind of heartbroke me because I knew that was coming. I talked to my mom. I was like, why are they doing this? They know what's going to happen to some of these schools and communities. So here we are 2 decades later, thank God, with some of the investments and community outreach and just upswell of interest there to make it right. But it's like that these policy decisions, budget, et cetera, like what are these ways that we can, come together and really lift up? And that's why I love Sarasota. I love the way that, it's a really interesting place and we have a wonderful school district and people like you and the foundation and other partners who just want to keep that. And I hope to, be an important part of that in some way, even if it's just how can we keep the state funding and coffers, kind of really with an eye towards outcomes and keeping our kids at the center of all of this.
That's great. Holly, I hear such an authenticity in you as to why you care about helping ensure all students across the whole state have the ability to thrive. So thank you for going into the field that you do, because I know personally I couldn't look at all those budgets and numbers and stay attentive to the impact that it makes. So that's a real gift and skill for you to bring to our community. So listeners, I hope you've enjoyed learning a little bit more, not only about Holly, her journey, but also how the Florida funding works for public schools in and across the state. So if you want to learn more about this work or any of the legislative items that the Florida Policy Institute is watching and covering, please, again, go visit their website at floridapolicy.org. And then, as always, if you want to learn more about the Education Foundation or even want to get involved in our work, we always want you to visit our website at www.edfoundationsrq.org. So, everyone, thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. If you liked it, make sure you leave a review, tell your friends, and tune into other episodes of Education Conversations. For now, this is Jennifer Vine signing off for the Education Foundation of Sarasota County.